Amos chapter 8.
This is what the Sovereign Lord showed me, a basket of ripe fruit. "What do you see, Amos?" he asked. "A basket of ripe fruit," I answered. Then the Lord said to me, "The time is ripe for my people Israel. I will spare them no longer. In that day," declares the Sovereign Lord, "the songs in the temple will turn to wailing. Many, many bodies flung everywhere. Silence. Hear this, you who trample the needy and do away with the poor of the land, saying, 'When will the new moon be over, that we may sell grain, and the Sabbath be ended, that we may market wheat?' Skimping the measure, boosting the price, and cheating with dishonest scales. Buying the poor with silver, and the needy for a pair of sandals. Selling even the sweepings with the wheat. The Lord has sworn by the pride of Jacob, 'I will never forget anything they have done.' Will not the land tremble for this, and all who live in it mourn? The whole land will rise like the Nile, and it will be stirred up and then sink like the river of Egypt. In that day, declares the Sovereign Lord, I will make the sun go down at noon, and darken the earth in broad daylight. I will turn your religious feasts into mourning, and all your singing into weeping. I will make all of you wear sackcloth and shave your heads. I will make that time like mourning for an only son, and the end of it like a bitter day. The days are coming, declares the Sovereign Lord, when I will send a famine through the land, not a famine of food or a thirst for water, but a famine of hearing the words of the Lord. Men will stagger from sea to sea, and will wander from north to east, searching for the word of the Lord, but they will not find it. In that day, the lovely young women and strong young men will faint because of thirst. They who swear by the shame of Samaria, or say, 'As surely as your God lives, O Dan,' or 'As surely as the God of Beersheba lives,' they will fall, never to rise again." This is the word of the Lord.
So we come to Amos chapter 8. One to go after tonight. And we're going to have a little reminder. Thank you. We need to remember that this book of Amos, this prophecy, which was spoken originally to the people of the Northern Kingdom, was set in time and space. It is really important tonight that we remember that when Amos spoke, he spoke to a certain people at a certain point in their history with a known conclusion coming from it. And we're going to consider that in a few minutes. But here you go. So the first king of Israel was Saul, followed 40 years later by David, followed 40 years later by Solomon, who on his death, 40 years later, the kingdom of Israel divided. 10 of the 12 tribes went north, became the northern kingdom of Israel. 2 tribes went south and became Judah. Judah was focused on Jerusalem, the northern kingdom on Dan and Bethel. It's very simple. They had 2 separate kingdoms. Amos, 160 years after the division of the kingdoms, was a shepherd in the southern kingdom of Judah. But his prophecy was to the northern kingdom. So he spoke God's words to the northern kingdom, although he lived in the south. And that's just a reminder, because we need to understand the historical context. We're going to get to it in a few minutes. Thanks very much. Now, there were certain things we need to also remember, is that chapter 7 and chapter 8 didn't exist when Amos spoke it. They're human divisions. We divide it up because it's easy to find in the Bible. Page 922, if you have my kind of Bible, is Amos chapter 8. But it wasn't there. Amos 7 and 8 is a continuing thought. There are 4 metaphors that God uses against his people. 4 pictures, if you like, to help explain what he's going to do. The first was the locusts. in chapter 7, verse 1. You'd have seen this last week. And because of that, they ask God to forgive them. Fire in chapter 7 and verse 4. And then the plumb line in chapter 7 and verse 7 is a major metaphor. The plumb line is that which shows you the vertical. It gives you an idea whether something is out of sync. It's not quite straight. And the plumb line was used. Now, before we get to the fourth one, which is tonight's metaphor, we need to understand also who is speaking here. Every time one of these metaphors is used, the term is said, the sovereign Lord declares. Every time these four metaphors are referred to. So you have chapter 7, verse 1, 4, 5, chapter 8, verses 1, 3, 9, and 11. This is a major theme. The sovereign Lord declares. The sovereign Lord is a name used of the slave owner. Somebody who owns people. They have a sense of unchallengeable power. The sovereign Lord, when they speak, even as a slave owner, it is to be done. It is going to happen. So when you have these four metaphors being used, and it says the sovereign Lord declares, there is no argument. There's no discussion, and there's no debate. God, the sovereign Lord, has said it, and it's going to happen. So against the context of who speaks it, we come to the fourth metaphor in Amos 8. And so we come to the time of God's judgment, verses 1 to 3. Now, if you have a Bible and you have it open, you just want to look at this. This is what the sovereign Lord showed me. So now we have Amos, and God speaking directly with Amos, and he says, he showed me a basket of ripe fruit. What do you see, Amos? And Amos says, I see a basket of ripe fruit. And God says, the time is ripe for my people Israel. Now there's a play on words here. And the NIV has used the play on words because it allows us to see the sense of relating it to the ripe fruit. The fruit is ripe, my people are ripe. But the word for ripe has a slight twist to it, because it actually means the end times. It means its usefulness is over. The ripe fruit is about to become uneatable, rotten. It's about to just fall apart. And so what God is saying here is that you look at this ball of ripe fruit, actually, you are, Israel is, it's finished, its usefulness is over, and it's gone. I'm going to end it. So the play on words of ripeness and ending is there for us to see. So he says in verse 8 of chapter 7, I will spare them no longer. And he says it again in chapter 8 and verse 2. I will spare them no longer. It is coming to an end. My patience, my mercy, my grace is ending. I am going to wipe this people off the face of the earth as a nation. This is really bad news for Israel. This is not comforting. There is no comfort in this chapter. I will spare them no longer, God says to his children of Israel, the northern kingdom. And that's why the plumb line and the ripe fruit are linked. Because they show that the people are not straight with God. And not only that, but their time is finishing. And God is going to draw a line. He's given them time to come back to him, but God's ways have been ignored. Thank you. So we go on again to the location. The location is quite important, really, because it's in the temple at Bethel in the northern kingdom. And Amaziah is the priest in the temple. We've seen him in the end of chapter 7. Amaziah was the priest. So this is where it's located. This is what this next verses are talking about. And it talks about the fact that they'll be singing. The people will be in the temple singing. They'll be presumably singing the Psalms. Wonderful. But the time is finished, and that singing in the middle of a song is going to turn to wailing. Actually, the word wailing is a terrible word. It's so understated. It means an inarticulate, shattering scream. Because in the middle of a song, frankly, the Assyrians are going to walk in. Because the Assyrians are the judgment of God on the nation of Israel. And it happened 60 years after the prophecy. Absolutely. They walk in and they start to kill people. So there's going to be a shattering scream as this army walk in to the temple at Bethel. And then there's going to be bodies flung everywhere. This is a terrible slaughter and carnage that's going to take place. Not only that, instead of singing, God says there's suddenly going to be silence. Silence. Because God has brought it to an end. His patience is ended. His grace is ended. His mercy is ended. And his judgment has come on the people of Israel in the northern kingdom. 160 years or so, 180 years after they'd split from Judah. And this is it. The response to carnage is silence. And one of the main lessons you can learn from this is the temple will not protect the worshippers from God's judgment. They were in the temple, but it didn't protect them. This is an awful, awful picture of God's judgment on his people of the northern kingdom of Israel. Thank you. But then you ask yourself, well, what's the reason? Well, the reason is in chapter 8, verses 4 to 7. And I have to tell you, this is an appalling, appalling way to behave. Hear this, you who trample the needy and do away with the poor of the land. When will the new moon be over that we may sell grain? The Sabbath be ended that we may market wheat? Skimping the measure, boosting the price, cheating with the honest scales, buying the poor with silver, the needy for a pair of sandals, selling even the sweepings with the wheat. And you suddenly realise that it's the oppression of the poor, the economic manipulation for the benefit of the few, land clearances and enslavement through debt, no compassion. This is an appalling situation. And it's not, and it wasn't unique. Because in Nehemiah's time, years later, Nehemiah, when he returns to Jerusalem from the southern exile, what does he find in Nehemiah 5? The people there are being taxed by their own leaders to the point they've got to sell their daughters into slavery to pay the tax. And this is their own people. This isn't some foreign land coming in as some kind of, like, you know, the Romans did or Babylonians did. This is their own people. So this kind of behavior was not unique at this point in history. This is God's people abusing God's people. And God says, I will not forget. This is forever ingrained on the memory of God. He says, I will not forget anything that they've done. They were practicing fraud. Fraud with their own people. Short measures. What did it say? Inflated prices, illegal scales, impure grain. They took the dust off the floor, mixed it with the grain, so it would boost the weight up, so they didn't have to sell as much grain to get the same amount of money. God's people to God's people. And God says, I'm not going to forget. I don't have a short memory on this one. This is really serious. Amos is saying some really awful things to people in the Northern Kingdom, because this is what God has said to Amos to say. And God is saying it through him. I will not forget anything they've done. And the result, thank you. The result is in chapter 8 and verses 10. In that day, says it twice, actually verse 3 and verse 9, certain things are going to happen. First of all, creation responds. It talks about creation responding to the judgment of God. It says there's going to be an earthquake in verse 8. In fact, it says in chapter 1 and verse 1 that this was written down 2 years before the earthquake happened. Because it mentions the earthquake in chapter 1, verse 1. There's going to be an eclipse of the sun. Chapter 5 mentions the eclipse as well, verses 18 to 20. So creation itself is responding to the judgment of God on his people. But you need to remember, this is not the end times that we talk about when we talk about the end times. This is not the end times of history. This is the end times of Israel. The end of Israel, religiously, politically and socially. God is going to take this nation and obliterate it. It never again will Israel stand as a nation in the way they did at this point. There's no promise of return here. Not like he did for Judah. 70 years in exile, back to Jerusalem. No way. This is not mentioned. There's no return mentioned in chapter 8 of Amos. It says, I will not forget. I will not forget. This, I think I wrote, is it on the screen? Yeah. This is the majestic power of the sovereign Lord against the helplessness of humankind. And the response of Israel, verse 8 and verse 10, they mourn. God has caused them to mourn, to inconsolably grieve. For what? For what? We don't know really. But they're grieving. Are they grieving because they've lost something? They were economically prosperous. They were really in good places economically at this time, Israel. They were buying and selling and it was wonderful. So are they grieving for something they've lost? Grieving because they're going to lose their nation? Grieving because they'll lose their life? But they're going to grieve. But there's more. And the more is, sorry, I've gone over 2 pages. That's not good news, is it? The more is famine. And it mentions in 11 to 14 a famine. And God is very clear. He says it's not actually physical food you're going to lose. You won't be hungry. This is economic prosperity of a nation. So you're not going to be hungry, but you're going to hunger in a different way. And it says there'll be no hearing when they're ready to listen. In other words, God has drawn a line and he said, hear and no further. And when the people then mourn and say, we want to hear God, God is going to be silent. Have you noticed 2 silences? Notice that? In the temple, when the singing was taking place and judgment came, and it was a devastating judgment, there was silence. The people were silent. The response is mourning on behalf of those who are left, but now God is silent. No more does he speak to his people in the Northern Kingdom. And it says they'll stagger and search and faint for the word of the Lord. There's a real sense of wanting here, of desire to hear. But God is silent. And because God is silent, they go somewhere else. And it says they go to Samaria and to Dan and to Beersheba. These are places where there were false gods being worshipped. Well, actually, that's not true. Samaria certainly was a temple to Baal. Dan was golden calves. We don't know about Beersheba. Nothing I read could ever tell me what was happening in Beersheba at this point. I just couldn't figure it, so I've put a question mark. Because I don't know. But it has to be something about searching somewhere apart from God for comfort and to be consoled by and comforted by somebody because of what was happening to them. So they went anywhere to try to find that kind of comfort. And they didn't find it. And God's conclusion in verse 14 is that they will fall never, never, never to rise again. That's a terrible picture. It's an awful picture of God's judgment on his people. So we have a problem. Thank you. How do we bridge the context? How do we take something from 2,800 years ago, bring it to today and say, well, what is this saying to us? Well, the first thing is, we need to remember that Israel was a nation and a people of God. And we also need to remember that we have a new covenant. And the new covenant is very clear that the people of God need not fear any judgment or condemnation of God. There is no fear for us as the people of God today. I'm going to come back to it in a few minutes. Followers of Jesus do not need to fear God's judgment. So here's a question for you. Is the judgment of God on Israel fair? Was God being fair? Was he acting justly? I mean, what happens to the mercy of God? What happens to his grace? What happens to his forgiveness? Why now? What's this about? Is he acting unjustly? So let me tell you a story. There was, if you can read the small writing, it says lecturer in small, in a, that's for me, not for you. There was a lecturer. And he taught a module. It's actually in a Bible college in the States. And he was teaching a module one semester. And he said to his group of students, there was quite a big group of students there. He said, I have three assignments for you this semester. And he gave them the titles of the three assignments. And he said, and he gave them the dates when they were due in over the semester. Okay, so the first date for the first semester, next date for the second, next date for the third. He said, and I want to tell you that if you do not get this assignment in on time, you fail the assignment. I'm not marking a late assignment. You'll just get an F for fail. Get it in on time. So the date for the first assignment comes. About 75% got in on time. 25% had their excuses. Oh, I was ill last week. Oh, it was this. No. Please, I'm so sorry. Would you forgive me and would you mark the assignment, please? So he said, yes, okay, I'll mark it. So he marked the 25% that didn't get in on time, gave him a mark. That's getting back their assignments. Second date, second assignment. Another percentage failed to get in on time. All the excuses under the sun, they came to him one by one, gave him their excuses, begged him, would you please forgive me, would you please mark my assignment, not failing? Yes, okay, I'll mark the assignment for you. So he marked the assignment, gave him back, that's fine. Third assignment came, a percentage didn't hand it in on time, so he walked into the next lecture that he was giving with the results of the assignment, and he said, and he began to go down the list, so he said, Adams, fail. Cartwright, fail. And there was an outcry. He says, in writing about this day, he said, there was an outcry. The students started saying to him, you can't do this. Why not? Because it's not fair. What's not fair? You've given me a fail, but you handed it in late. You've failed. But it's not just. It's unjust. You want justice? Yes, we want justice. You want fairness? Yes, we want fairness. Adams, you failed the first and second, as well as the third. Cartwright, you passed the first, failed the second, and failed the third. No, we want mercy. Listen. He had given them very clear directions on what to do. He'd given them the time to do it. And the first two, he acted in grace. And the third, he acted in judgment. God gave the people of Israel 160 years of patience, time, grace, and mercy. And they ignored him. Chapter 4 says so many times in Amos 4, verse 4, 8, 9, 10, and 11, you have not returned to me. He gave them so many opportunities, so many times that they could go back to him and worship him and follow him, and they refused to do it. You have not returned to me. And God, as sovereign Lord, unchallengeable power, said, this is the line in the sand and the time's over. And he has every right to do it. So was he fair? Absolutely he was fair. 160 years fair. Was he just? Absolutely. 160 years just. Merciful? Yes, 160 years. That's why when we read the scriptures, we need to understand who God is. And actually, in our familiarity with him, and rightly so, he's our Father. He's also sovereign Lord. So we need to press on here for a minute. Thank you. We need to beware. And this is why we come back to the beginning where I started from. We don't transfer the judgment that Amos talks about to today. We do not walk out of here guilty and under God's judgment on the basis of Amos 8. You can't, you really mustn't do that. It's really dangerous. Amos refers to a judgment, not of eternal judgment, but of a particular people in time and space. And the judgment happened, and it's over. So Amos said, judgment is over. It happened with the Assyrians marching in 722 BC. But the lessons for us in Amos 8 have to do with principles. We need to look at what is happening in Amos 8 and learn from that. Now, listen, I'm not making an easy option. What we're going to cover now for a few minutes is not the easy option. You think, sit there and think, oh, I'm not judged by God. Oh, wonderful. No, hang on a minute. It's not that simple. It really isn't that easy. For us to love God and to serve him with all our hearts and to depend on him and obey him is a massive challenge. Because that's what the people were asked to do. And they would not return to him. So there were people, the people of God, who were ignoring God entirely. So where are the applications? Well, thank you. Just going to walk through one or two quite simple applications from the passage. When God has graciously communicated with us, we should take it very seriously and not ignore it. And God has communicated with us. He's communicated through his creation. Wonderful creation. Romans 1 tells us through his creation, through his word. He's given us his word. It's very clear. He's communicated. And through his son. And when he communicates with us, we should not ignore him. When he speaks, we shouldn't ignore him, because one day he might not speak to us. We might not have the ears to hear what he's saying. So one lesson is, we should take it seriously. We need to continue to grow in self-awareness. Amos 8 is focused on the people of God who knew about God and chose to reject what he said. Romans 2:8 says, those who are self-seeking and who reject the truth and follow evil, there will be anger and wrath. And it's very interesting because in Exodus 34, you have these, you know Exodus 34. This is a wonderful little passage, verses 6 and 7. It says, and he passed in front of Moses, that's the Lord, proclaiming, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands, forgiving wickedness and rebellion and sin. And you think, oh, that's good. But then the next verse, half verse says, yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. Listen, there is a price tag. There is a price tag to rejecting truth. Always a price tag. So whilst it may not be the Assyrians marching in on us, there is for us individually a price tag. If we know God, want to follow him, but then continually reject what he's saying. Who are the guilty? Those who intentionally reject God. Thank you. Then we need to live with integrity. I think this is a terrible condemnation of the people of God, working with the people of God and abusing them. We need to live with integrity with each other. Scales in verse 5 were the scales that they weighed for grain. So they'd have a scale, put a weight on one side, grain on the other. When they balanced, you know, you paid for the grain you had and you took it away. They used to drill holes in the bottom of the scales, you know. And they take out the heavy metal and they put in something soft. They put in something heavy so it would weigh more. So the balance, you didn't have to sell as much grain to get the same amount of money. And it's really interesting. In Proverbs 11 and verse 1, the Lord abhors dishonest scales, but accurate weights is delight. The Lord detests differing weights, and dishonest scales don't please him. Now, we don't do that. I've never sold grain with scales. Can I tell you? I never have. But you apply the principle of integrity, honesty with each other. It's very important. God thinks this is really important. When he was judging the people of Israel, one of the things he pointed to was their dishonesty with each other, their lack of integrity. So we need to be honest with each other. Then we need to love God with all our heart. It was really interesting. When you read this, you kind of get the idea. They're in the temple, you know, and it's Sabbath. Well, on the Sabbath, everything stopped. 6 o'clock one night to 6 o'clock the next night, it all stopped. But these people, it was saying of them that they stood in the temple thinking, when's this going to be over? I've got a contract to get signed. And the festivals came. They went to the festival and thought, when's this going to be over so I can sell some dishonest grain again? Their hearts weren't here. Bodily they were here. Their hearts were miles away. Well, there's a lesson for us, isn't it? Is it? Let me just ask you, ever so quietly, at some point in the service tonight, have you thought about work tomorrow? Because that's what this is about. That's what God's talking about. Being here physically, but not emotionally, not spiritually, not mentally, somewhere else. So their hearts were distracted by secondary issues. So there's some fantastic lessons here for us. Look to God as our protector. Don't put your trust in. I mean, you don't come to the, you know, I suppose we don't think about, this is not a temple in that sense, is it? You don't think about it that way. But if you apply the principle, they thought being in the temple would protect them. What do you look to protect you other than God? Because God is our protector, that's what it says. That's who he says he is. He's our rock. He's our fortress. And he'll protect us. So who are you looking to protect you from? Good lessons, really. But not about judgment at this point, okay? Don't walk out the door thinking, you know, I'm finished. We're finished. No, no. No, that's not so. Time and space and history. That was a particular time, and God did it, and it's over. But for us, other lessons to learn.